Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Franchise Today broadcasting live on the heels of the IFA 2016 convention in San Antonio. And I'm joined by my guest, Stan Friedman from Atlanta, who just got in after attending the show. Yours truly here was not able to attend, so I'm really excited for Stan to give us a recap. Stan, how are you today?
Doing great, Paul. It's great to be back. And our guest actually is Anthony Minolto. I don't want to confuse anybody about who's doing what here today, or unless Paul has some news you want to share with me that I don't know about. Maybe Anthony's the co-host and I'm the guest.
Yeah. Well, hey. Anthony's last name is Owen, not Minolto. You tried to make him Italian, didn't you?
Did I do that? I mean, I'll tell you what, Paul, this has just been a whirlwind week. Got back into Atlanta, bounced our way into Atlanta through some of that weather and was covering over the southeast, and got in here late last night, but all wound up with so much excitement from this convention. This was a milestone convention for IFA, I think, in many different ways. There was a tremendous buzz, a positive buzz around the convention, and when you consider all of the things that are still confronting us that we talk about weekly here on the podcast, none of those things have gone away. But, you know, it's great when you get all the positive energy together that a convention, which is the largest in IFA's history, brings when you've got all that body of people and intellectual capital and shared visions, values, and ethics coming together to kind of drink from the well. I always look at the IFA convention a lot like IFA is the franchisor, and we all flip, whether you're a supplier or a franchisor or a franchisee, we all become like franchisees, and we join together to gain information from one another, to network with one another, to partake of all of the educational information that's shared, and of course to do the wonderful networking that we do in the exhibit hall and over dinner and drinks at the bar. This year was just an amazing amount of shift of gears, I think, in the way the mood felt. While we're still all confronted with all the things that are going on, we have new leadership, there's a really harmonic convergence in that leadership, in that Robert Crisante and his style, a lot different than his predecessor, and we miss Caldera. We say that all the time. He brought us what we needed when we needed it. And now we have Robert Crisante with a bit of a different cadence in how he approaches messaging and the messaging that's being delivered. And beside him is the incoming chair, Aziz Hashim. And what an eloquent acceptance of the gavel speech Aziz gave yesterday. So if I were to just recap on the front of the house, Paul, some of the high spots of this event. You know, the convention opened with Stanley McChrystal, and what an incredible speaker this guy is. And you could hear a pin drop in that room. I mean, basically, his message was all about, you know, people and getting the most out of people. And people are the most important part of any organization, whether it's military, whether it's private sector. He just broke it all down and was very quick to remind everyone that 2/3 of job growth in America is coming out of small business. We heard that from him. We heard from the new administrator of the SBA, Maria Contreras-Sweet, who, as a member of the Obama administration, still gets it when it comes to small business. She was very pro-small business, and she's a real advocate in support of small business. And I think that having her on the agenda, which seemed like a last-minute addition, she wasn't in the book, but I think that Mr. Crisante was able to secure her and the message that she brought, and what a positive note. And again, just a change or a shift in that here we have a cabinet member of the Obama administration delivering a positive message to the audience at IFA and getting a standing ovation for doing it, which I thought was not a bad start for his first few months in office for Mr. Crisante. We had some exciting news from the IFA Educational Foundation about their rebranding, and so they've got their own logo and a new name, and their name is the Franchise Education and Research Foundation. And what's being done there is Next Gen CFE, the Diversity Institute, VetFran, and Franchising Gives Back. All of the initiatives of the nonprofit portion of IFA are now being treated as branded units underneath the FERF umbrella. And so while the IFA on the IFA side is still doing political advocacy and government relations and pushing out all that needs to be done in support of those same initiatives, the aforementioned initiatives, the Educational Foundation is taking on a softer feel toward the need to change the paradigm about what franchising is and to help create more understanding that franchising is a bunch of small businesses with local ownership underneath those big national branded names, and through initiatives like Franchising Gives Back and the other brands under the Educational Foundation, we're going to do a tremendous yeoman's job this year of helping people understand that franchising is business done locally by national brands. It's not national brands owning the business in your marketplace. And so Doc Cohn has taken the helm for another year to chair the Educational Foundation. John Reynolds and he are going to work together to raise lots of money on the nonprofit side of IFA and push initiatives such as Franchising Gives Back. And Roar Capital right here in Atlanta, Paul, as announced in a press release this week, is accepting nominations for 2016 Franchising Gives Back for annual awards that are going to be offered at the FAN conference in September in Washington. And Roark is asking companies in the IFA Educational Foundation, FERF, to submit applications now through June 17th for any of their affiliated organizations and that are involved in giving back to their local communities. And basically, there are a handful of categories. There's the Spirit of Franchising Award that will honor IFA members whose charitable or community support programs embody the spirit of what it means to be part of a franchising industry by giving back to the local community. There'll be a Newcomer Award, an Enduring Impact Award, a Support for Our Veterans Award, and an Innovation and Impact Award. And Steve Romanello and Roark have invested heavily in helping to raise the bar on helping the general community all across the country understand that franchising is not big business. Franchising is local business, and we're giving back to local communities. You can find more about all of this on IFA's website. Paul, there were some really tremendous awards that we were proud to see given out. The founders of Little Caesars were given the Hall of Fame Award. Mike and Marion Illich, who have been so involved in franchising and have done so many great things in the city of Detroit and around the world with Little Caesars, were honored as well they should be. Guillermo Perales was named Entrepreneur of the Year with Sun Holdings. He is probably one of those Aslam Khan type high-profile multi-unit franchisees. He's got hundreds of restaurants and under several different brands and flags that he flies, from CeCe's, Krispy Kreme, Arby's, Golden Corral. We saw VetFran turn 25 years old at this year's convention. We heard from Gordon Logan, reliving some of the great things that VetFran's accomplished and reminding everyone that more is needed. And the same with diversity. We saw the IFA 2015 Ron Harrison Award given to the CEO of Century 21 Real Estate. And with all we do, you know, that was Rick Harrison, by the way, with all we do with VetFran and with diversity, they're still called out, to my surprise, that there are far fewer members in the IFA organization actually participating in these programs than one might think. So out of 1,300 or 1,400 franchisor members, when you look for the active members that are participating in VetFran or DiversityFran, the number is somewhere around 100 or 200, hardly what you'd think would be involved and engaged. And we'd certainly love to encourage more engagement in both of these tremendous programs and helping veterans and those of diverse communities become more actively engaged in franchising. The last thing I want to share with you, Paul, before we invite our guest to say hello, was the changing of the gavel. And, you know, who could be better than Melanie Bergeron? I don't know who could be better, but who could be every bit as great is a tremendous guy that I've come to know and really appreciate a friendship with, and that's Aziz Hashim. And much like Robert Crisante's opening message was softer and just you felt a different cadence than we have in past years about his approach to leadership. So too was the case with Azeem when he took the gavel from Melanie. And very eloquently, Aziz said, you know, SEIU and joint employer and NLRB and all the things that are out there are still out there and they're not going away. And yes, they are issues we have to concern ourselves with. But what Aziz pointed out even more so than that was that the real enemy is none of those things as compared to the real enemy being ignorance. And ignorance comes in many forms. He brought it all the way down to his own business where he pays his employees with payroll checks that have a Popeyes brand on it. They think they work for Popeyes, that he has to do a better job even in his own units to educate his employees about who it is they work for. They work for him, not for Popeyes. And that this is pervasive at almost every level of consciousness, that people do not really understand what franchising is, what franchising does, and what franchising contributes to the economy. And so Aziz was very, very eloquent in talking about how it all starts with education and higher education and formalizing education. There aren't enough books in the marketplace written by experts or educators or people who have been formally trained in franchising. And he's taken it as part of his mantle this year to raise the bar on that. And in fact, he's joining us at KSU, Kennesaw State University, here on Friday morning, locally, to participate in an initiative that Tom Wood from Floor Coverings International has been at center stage in bringing a curriculum to Kennesaw State, an entrepreneurship undergrad school at KSU that will be taught in 2016 as a minor, but offered in 2017 as a major. And so we need to be doing more of these things to help continue to churn and change the vision of people's perceptions that franchising is something different than local businesses living in and working in and creating jobs in and supporting the members of local communities all across the country, albeit representing national brands. These are local businesses, and that's the driving message that I think we're going to be pushing and pushing hard and using social media and other platforms to help us bring that message to the marketplace. And I think that's my segue, Paul, to I could go on for days about this convention because it was just that fast-paced and there were so many things to share and talk about. But I think we park it there for now and we segue into a gentleman who was with us there at the convention, who is part of that digital world that we all live in, and I'm going to let you take it from there to introduce him.
Well, that's very, very perfectly said, very eloquently said, everything about the event, Stan. I really appreciate that. I know our listeners appreciate that, and you certainly could hear the enthusiasm in your voice. I think it speaks loudly for this new, you know, quote-unquote administration of the IFA. And yes, social media is definitely going to play a big role in today's show. Social media, the unequivocal people's channel, is something that our guest Anthony Owen had mentioned in an article he wrote for FranchiseExpo.com. And a quote from there, he said, was, driving social media can be a valuable investment of time. However, ensuring that you approach social media with the same level of rigor, control, and efficiency as you would traditional marketing is key. With the right preparation, tools, and evaluation, growing and protecting your brand and business on social media can be efficient, cost-effective, and successful. Anthony, welcome to Franchise Today.
Yeah, thanks very much, Paul, and thanks for the intro, and thank you as well, Stan. It was, I have to say, you know, I'm pretty new into the US franchising space, as most people can probably tell from my accent, but this is my, you know, third event, and as a business, you know, we try to be very, very active in the franchise space here in the US, and you know, participate in as much as we can, and you know, this is the third conference I've done now, and I agree with you, Stan. I think it was probably one of the most active, busiest, and most, you know, from our point of view anyway, you know, positive conferences with some awesome outcomes as a result. So I think all in all, you know, these events are getting, you know, better and better, you know, certainly from my point of view, as we continue to go and participate.
You know, it's interesting. Social media, it seems, finally is coming to a head, and, or at least to the forefront in everybody's mind. It was interesting to me as I saw different Facebook posts in the memory section, going back 6 or 7 years ago, that I had written almost to the point of expressing some concern, and I guess concern in that people just weren't latching onto it. And yet, from what I've heard out of the event, is that franchise attitudes are definitely starting to change. Anthony, are you seeing that franchisors' attitudes towards social are changing versus a couple of years ago?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, if you look at the panel that, you know, Ron Feldman pulled together, you know, with myself and the guys from Fishman PR, you know, Tudor Doctor and Painting with a Twist, you know, I think it was a really good balanced panel, right, because it obviously involved a company like ours, but then went all the way through the PR, marketing and how to do it, and then some great examples of how, you know, a couple of pretty well-known franchise systems are now really, you know, adapting social media as a core communication channel, and how it's now, you know, and they had some really good examples as how it was actually starting to drive revenue, demonstrating return on investment, and really clearly showing, you know, how the you know, the power of social media, you know, was working for them, and could be translated into other franchise industry, you know, sector as well. So, you know, and I think, you know, looking at the crowd in the room, I believe there was 150, 160 people. It's probably the biggest crowd I've seen for social media, and I think more than 50% of those people were franchisors or marketing people within franchise systems, and you know, a lot of interaction, a lot of questions, and certainly a lot of interest. And obviously post the panel, you know, we had a lot of people come up and talk to us, ask more questions, follow us up at our stand and want to know more. And we've already had some phone calls coming into the office this morning from people we spoke to wanting more information and some sort of demo. So, look, I definitely think, you know, the franchisors, you know, are starting to, you know, get on board with social media and starting to really see the power of what it can do as another communication channel, marketing channel for their business.
Yeah, very well said. Do you still see some trepidation and some fear? I know it's easy to accept, but it doesn't always, you know, squash the fears. Are you still hearing about some of the fears and trepidation?
Yeah, you don't so much hear about fears anymore. I think the big challenge that I'm, particularly when you talk to some of the larger franchise systems, you know, where, you know, the issue that they really face is that a lot of their franchisees have kind of got ahead of them a bit and built their own Facebook pages, their own Twitter accounts. They're already, you know, managing and communicating with the communities around their business at a local level, and have really left the franchisor behind. And you know, that's obviously created the problem where, you know, the rigor that they have around every other aspect of their business that makes their franchise system so successful just isn't in place in the social media thing. And you know, I think the bigger thing they're finding is not so much the fear. It's really like, okay, our franchisees are doing this now. They all seem to be pretty active in it. Now, how can we help them improve what we're doing? How can we support their initiatives at a local level? You know, and how can we get better visibility around, you know, the type of communities we've got? How big are they? How active are they? And what can we do to tap into the power of those communities, you know, from a business point of view? So I think the questioning, you know, I've certainly seen a shift away from the what if somebody says something bad about us on our Facebook page, you know, that could damage the business, to, you know, moving more towards, okay, how can we do this in a more efficient, smarter way? And it's been really nice to see that shift over the past couple of years.
Well, Anthony, you set the table for my next question because that's just exactly where I was going to go and ask, so how do you manage that? How does Minalto explain to the audience a bit about Minalto's role in social and what it is that you do to help franchisors fill that need?
Sure. So what Minalto does is we're a software company, you know, pure and simple. We don't, you know, consult or do social media strategies, and I think it's always important to get that up front. But essentially, Minalto was built, you know, exclusively for the franchise sector, the chain store sector, and organisations that operate very large decentralised business systems. And Minalto allows these organisations to essentially cast a net around all of the social media assets, bring them all into a central dashboard, and then align their social media to all their existing, you know, corporate marketing and communication rigor, as well as the corporate structure. So they can filter their assets by, you know, country, state, cluster, region, all the way down to the local level. They can filter them by, you know, product or genre or however it is they want to do it in order to manage their social media assets properly. We offer them, you know, some very granular user controls as well as a centralized image library that they can populate with pre-approved and pre-formatted video, text, you know, audio and images, while at the same time allowing the local people to continue doing what they're doing at a local level. But one of the big advantages is that head office can then get an aggregated view of their analytics. They can get an aggregated view of the success of posts, what are working, what posts aren't working. They can, at the click of a button, manage their brand. At the click of a button, they can push out a product launch or some new promotion they're running, which allows them to then support the local franchisee, whilst allowing them to continue doing what they're doing at a local level. So really, Minalto, in short, is a piece of software that just allows for very efficient management of social media and allows franchisors to understand what's going on in their social media communities.
It's, you know, so many franchisors, you know, look at this as a way of either controlling or not controlling, you know, messaging and what have you. And I think that's what, you know, causes some trepidation. But like Stan had said about Aziz, about ignorance, it's certainly something that they shouldn't be ignorant of. They need to educate themselves and learn of. And I know, Stan, you and I have been talking with people about, you know, NLRB and joint employer issues. And I know you have something to add with respect to that. With
yeah, just a question that nags in the back of my mind, Anthony, is the more that franchisors do to provide for centralization, on one hand, they get attaboys for being responsible, terrific franchisors, continuing to bring great programs and make them available for their network of affiliated users all over the country as franchisees, and then on the other hand, it's those very wonderful things that they do that wind up getting them slapped for, see, there they are, they're joint employers, they're telling them what to do. How does that problem interface at all, and if at all, how do you circumvent those issues that franchisors may have that, you know, it's just one more thing that we're doing that would be deemed to be too much control and therefore subject to further scrutiny for NLRB or joint employer. Do you hear any of that? And if so,
yeah,
how do you allay those concerns so members of this audience that think that that might be a problem for them don't have to worry about it?
Yeah, you do come across it, and I have to say I find it curious. Is probably the best way to describe it. I mean, you know, and there's you know, this is probably a whole topic on its own, Stan, as you'd appreciate, around this sort of stuff. I mean, I look at it as, you know, if you look at the way, you know, when I buy, if I'm somebody who wants to buy a franchise, right, I'm buying it. Why am I buying it? For a range of reasons, right? I like the product. It's got a really strong brand. It's got a support network. The franchisor is active. You know, it's all of those type of things. So I kind of buy this business in a box. And in that box comes my uniforms, my product, my brand guidelines, you know, a website, email addresses, you know, and obviously that franchisee's intention is to leverage off the strength of that brand, right? So, you know, and social media, for a whole range of reasons, just fell outside of that box. I think probably just because of the pace that the uptake on particularly Facebook business pages, you know, just sort of, you know, moved along and the franchisees jumped ahead of it. But I just don't see why it's any different to everything else that goes on when I buy a franchise. I mean, to me, from a franchisor point of view, it should be a value add that comes as a part of the, you know, purchasing of a franchise, right, system, and go, here's your, by the way, here's your Facebook page, here's your Twitter account. But then if you look at also the way a lot of these franchise systems do their marketing and communication, right, you know, and I don't mean to sound too general about this, but if you think about it in terms of the franchisor will support the franchisee through national marketing initiatives, right, they'll support them on television or radio and newspapers, while at the same time the local franchisee will do their local area marketing, whether it's a sponsoring of a sports team or whether it's a letterbox drop to promote their business in their local area. I just don't understand, you know, why this is any different. Monalto's been built in a way that aligns it to that typical marketing and communication structure, that, you know, where they can click a button and broadcast a new product launch out to every single Facebook page and still let the local person do what they do at a local level because they know best, you know, at that level. Now, having said that, I think one of the bigger things that I find curious is, you know, there seems to be quite an emotional attachment to these Facebook business pages, you know, where the franchisees I talk to go, no, that's my page, it doesn't belong to the franchise, or I built it and I manage it and it's mine. And it's like, oh, yeah, my view is, well, really, it's actually a part of the IP of that franchise, and it's a part of the entire business system that makes that franchise and franchisor system successful. But you do certainly see a lot of it where, you know, they're not wanting to take too much control over the social media side of things. And yet, if you think about it, you know, the franchisor dictates a lot of what these people can and can't do in their marketing and communication side of things, you know, right now, today, every day. So I think it's really one of those things that it's change, it's new, and they just don't quite know how to manage it, added with the emotional attachment most, you know, people I talk to have around their Facebook business page.
Well, I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve as these legal challenges evolve as well. We'll just make adjustments to them as we do with everything else, is my guess. This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman along with Paul Segreto, and we're speaking today with Anthony Owen, founder and president of Monalto. Franchise Today is brought to you by Paul Segreto's Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator helping early stage franchise systems stand up and emerging franchise brands grow up as they scale their brands for sustainable growth. Franchise Today, also brought to you by FRM Solutions, where we offer robust, out-of-the-box CRM and content management software solutions, all tailored specifically for franchising and to assist with the management of relationships between franchisors and their prospective and existing franchisees.
You know, Anthony, you brought up a great point, and it seemed like you were leading towards, you know, integration between the local and the national messaging, and that's obviously extremely important. It also gives a bit of uniqueness, obviously, to the local pages, and not every local page would look the same because there would be some specific local messaging on there. But you also mentioned about how some franchisees, you know, have this, you know, proprietary type control over their local page. And you know, I think that all comes down to, you know, the relationship between franchisee and franchisor and everybody being on the same page. But one of the key points that you brought out that I think lends to this are the franchisees that got there first, so to speak, because there are some and doing it quite well. So to that end, what recommendations or suggestions or advice would you give to franchisors that are really taking this leap into social media, new focus into social media, but have franchisees that in essence got there first?
Yeah, it's a it's a difficult one because, you know, with all the systems and companies and that we're talking to, it there's a real, you know, it varies so much around, you know, their approach and particularly the reaction that the franchisees have towards what the franchisor's got to do. And I think, you know, it comes back to the point I think Stan was making about one of the keynotes, you know, around it's education. you know, we find once we start working with a franchise system where there is a lot of pushback by certain franchisees or large groups of them, that once we get a webinar going and, you know, we get as many franchisees on that webinar as possible to explain what we do, why it's not removing control from them. If anything, it's adding value to what they're trying to do at a local level, because it means head office can support their initiatives, you know, through much larger, you know, national campaigns or state-by-state campaigns that they're planning to do to support those franchise systems. It also means, you know, that, you know, head office are populating the image library with pre-approved content that can be used by these people, right? So it allows them to keep their brand under control, allows them to stay on message. You know, you think about it, you know, if I want to do a letterbox drop as a local franchisee, I have to use the letterbox drop guidelines for that particular flyer that are provided to me by the franchisor. Well, it's again, it's very similar in this whole model with using a tool like Monalto, where, you know, go ahead and do it, you're doing it at a local level, and oh, by the way, here's some pre-approved materials, some videos you can use, here's some post templates that we've already built that you can just at the click of a button use and push out to your local community, right? But again, you know, to me it just seems to be an education thing. We find we turn most franchisees around fairly quickly once we've had a very thorough conversation with them and giving them a much deeper understanding of, you know, why this is beneficial and how it will work in their favor. You know, so again, it just comes back to the education.
That's a great point you've just made, in that you're really just, you're helping them understand the certain standards, but you're not really controlling what they're going to do with those. So that's kind of neat. What about the franchise companies, Anthony? It sounds to me like Monalto would be a great tool for great big enterprises and huge franchise companies, but is anybody too small? Or would any franchisor be beneficial? Would it be beneficial for any franchisor to start while they're small with Monalto and continue to grow into the system?
Yeah, look, there's certainly no franchise that's too small to come onto the system. I mean, again, even if you've only got 5 Facebook pages, 5 Twitter accounts and an Instagram account, and you're trying to manage it all, there's still a process of logging in, logging out, logging in, logging out to the different platforms to try and get the same message pushed out, you know, whereas with us, you can do it at the click of a button. So I don't think it's about, you know, size when it comes to us. I mean, we can manage, we've got systems as small as, you know, 10, 12 units, and we've got other systems with multiple thousand Facebook pages running, and then obviously everything in between on that. So, you know, I don't think, yeah, I think Painting with a Twist were a very good example of it, where, you know, Renee went out and she's pre-registered all the Facebook pages. She's populated Facebook pages. Before they open a new franchise, they start a very active social media marketing campaign around that Facebook page in order to drive interest and excitement and those type of things. And I think she's a very good example of someone that, you know, started getting control of all of this social media at a very early stage. You know, and she's upwards now just shy of 300 franchise systems. And, you know, the control and the elements that she's built to manage that effectively and efficiently are a really great example of how tools like Monalto can help these businesses grow into social media and maintain control of them. Because there's all the risk elements around it as well. You know, it's worth a small franchise system who's rolling out, you know, 1, 10 or 50 units a month to pre-register those Facebook pages and Twitter accounts, right? Because anyone else can go and do it, right? And there's nothing that that business can do to stop it. So I think getting ahead of the curve is very, very important. You know, for the franchise systems where their franchisees have already gone ahead of them, it's about them trying to, you know, not so much get control is probably the wrong word, but to work out how to do it more efficiently and more effectively and support those local initiatives. So they're playing a bit of catch-up. And it's a very simple process to, you know, get ahead, back on top of the curve and slightly ahead of it for these franchisors, you know, once they make a decision to use a tool like Monalto to get some elements of control and efficiency in.
You know, I think you hit it on the head when you were talking about how franchisors, when a franchisee comes on board, basically is giving them, you know, a business in a box, their franchise in a box. And yeah, all too many franchise organizations are not considering proactively, and I think that's the key word here, proactively, they're not considering, you know, social media as part of that franchise in a box. And I love the your statement about, you know, what Painting in a Twist is doing by getting ahead of the curve, because Not only is it important in my mind to get at the head of the curve and start securing those pages, but it can be done from a proactive standpoint, from franchise development efforts, to use that in your franchise candidate messaging almost ahead of getting into that market, as a way of people being able to see that you are coming to that market. And I know back in the early days when BJ Emerson was at Tasty Delight, they did that tremendously by announcing ahead of time that they were coming into a market. They were using hashtags and they were identifying the market and starting to put up Facebook pages in order to get people to basically say, hey, I want that. No different than a construction site that has a coming soon XYZ franchise for information, contact us. I think it's great from a proactive standpoint as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing to consider, and I have to say it's one of the probably the single most surprising aspect of social media for me, which was really the basis of what Minalto sort of was built on 4 years or so ago, is brand management. And it doesn't matter if you're looking at a Unilever, a Procter & Gamble, a McDonald's, FedEx, all the way down to a small franchise system. The lack of brand controls and consistent messaging that's going on out there, it's one of the things that really surprises me, right? Because, as I used in the panel presentation, the example, right, if I see the FedEx van come up my driveway and the FedEx guy knocks on my door, I'm happy for my 8-year-old daughter to go and answer it because I know it's FedEx. And I know it's FedEx because the trucks are all the same, the brand's consistent, the guy's in the same uniform every time. And, and if I walk into a Hilton hotel, I know it's the Hilton because I know the brand, I know the uniforms, right? But if I go to a Hilton Facebook page or a FedEx Facebook page where the logo's wrong, right, and the messaging, I saw an ad about a deal at the Hilton Miami, and there, and I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. I found it on their Facebook page, and I want to purchase it. But because the logos are all wrong and the branding's not on, the branding's out of sync with everything else that they do, I hesitate because I don't know if I'm dealing with a real Hilton. Right, or whether it's some dodgy page has been set up, right? And so why am I going to transact and communicate on a Hilton Facebook page or a Carl's Jr. Facebook page or a FedEx Facebook page if I'm not confident that the brand, that it's a real page, right? And the reason I doubt whether it's a real page is because the brand consistency doesn't exist. And yet, whether I'm talking to a small franchise system or some very large franchise systems, right, they just, I don't know, it just astounds me that these very, very strong brands and very successful businesses allow this type of thing to go on, right? And it's one thing I can just never get my head around. I'd flag it, but I think that's a starting point, right?
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's like somebody getting an email and it looks like a legitimate email, and if they would just take a glance at the email address and see that it's not the brand.com, they immediately know that this is an illicit email and somebody's just representing themselves as anything but the brand. But
I think in reverse too, Paul. We're talking about it from the Zohr side and from the power of the equity of the brand, and think about it. If you were to board an airplane and get on a Delta jet, and the captain is standing at the cockpit door as you're getting on the plane, and he's in a pair of shorts, he's got a 3-day-old beard, and he's in a T-shirt. Are you going to get on that plane and fly it? Heck no. And you're on the right plane, but it's still not it's going to wake you up as a consumer to the fact that you know what that brand's message is, and this is not consistent with it, it's going to push you away. And if all these franchisees do what they do with thinking it's the right thing or thinking it's an okay thing, the power of that brand is so much stronger than, I've said so many times as a joke, if you put a Neiman Marcus sign over a Walmart store, how many steps into that store would you need to take before you knew you're not in the right place?
Oh, I 100% agree. I mean, you think about it. If you buy a franchise, right, and I've just bought a new franchise, there's no way the franchisor is going to let me open that store unless I've got the right uniform on. Imagine buying, opening up an H&R Block store, for example, and then deciding you're going to sell hot dogs. as well, right? They're just not going to let you do it. They're not going to, you know, you have to wear the uniform. You have to have this point of sale. You have to have this on the front of the shop. You've got, there's all these rules that are built around it. And yet, you know, it's 100% overlooked at this point in time. In the social media side of things, and that's always the bit, you know, I might sound a bit frustrated by it, but I guess I find it, you know, just astounding. I mean, FRM all have the same business cards, you know, Franchise Foundry all have the same business cards, and everything's look and feel, and we're not franchises. Every franchise system's as consistent and as, you know, rigorous as to what's in that box and what you can and can't do, and yet this, you know, social media, as we've talked about, is falling outside of that, but there just doesn't seem to be any urgency to get that brand and messaging under control, yet they spend so much money in traditional marketing and communication to make sure it is on message all day, every day.
You know, absolutely spot on. I definitely agree, and as much as I'm in social media, I obviously have a passion for this. And we've seen, you know, some shift over the last couple of years, you know, where the big buzz is content. And, of course, we talk about uniformity in logo, uniformity in trademark, uniformity in trade dress. And there's so many nowadays that, you know, are not looking at content and uniform type messages and how it's being conveyed. So how is content marketing, as well as other type of content messages out there, how can it be utilized for the power that it is, you know, through social media, and why should it come through social media?
Well, a lot of people talk about all of these sort of things like Facebook and Twitter being disruptive, and, you know, and I have a very different view of that. I don't see them as disrupting anything, frankly. You know, they annoy the newspapers and other companies and things like that, but the reality is that, you know, these platforms like Facebook and like Twitter are just other communication channels. They're just other ways to get your message into the market, and I do say that one of the challenges, and look, you know, we face it here as a business ourselves, and Paul, you and I have spoken about this on and off around, you know, how do I get my content out there, you know, what do I say, how often do I say it, and all of those type of things, and, you know, and there seems to be, you know, it when they people look at social media, I think they find it really overwhelming, and again, it points back to this education thing. How many times a day should I post? You know, how do I respond to something that's negative? How do I respond to something that's positive? Where does this content come from? And, you know, you've only got to scratch a little bit below the surface, which we find in our business, and I'm sure you guys do as well. The content's right there in front of you, right? You're already creating messages for the other forms of marketing and communication. Just take that message, put it onto social media, right? Is it going to be successful? Well, nobody knows, right? It becomes a trial and error exercise. And again, I point back to, you know, the guys at Tudor Doctor and Renee at Painting with a Twist. You know, they openly concede that it's been a bumpy road of trial and error, you know, learning what works and what doesn't work. Some posts might work well in one state but not another state, and just refining your message. But it's about that commitment to, you know, to giving it a go and learning about what's working and not what's not working. And that's not something that can be taught. It's not something that can be predicted. It is a pure trial and error process. We go through it ourselves every day. Don't be overwhelmed by the content side of it, because if you just look closely inside your marketing department, if you look closely at all your franchisees and all of the people that are contributing, you've got more than enough content to get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think you hit on a big word there, which was, you know, commitment, being committed to this. It's not just a stop-start type of exercise. But, of course, it is a trial and error. I think that was an excellent point. So, too many try to be, you know, absolutely perfect. And, of course, as we know, progression wins over perfection every time. And to that end, you know, you have many franchise organizations that look at social media and they want to look at it entirely like a billboard. I know one of the big mistakes that I see is just, you know, constant brand regurgitation. You know, this is our special. These are our hours. This is what's new. And there's no reason for people to come back to that page. It's if anything, to me, that's anti-social media, not social media.
Yeah. But it's a challenge, and, you know, and I think one of the, you know, we're seeing a lot of growth where, you know, where we've hired people ourselves who are just pure content marketers, right? So that's their job in here is to produce right content and get it pushed out there. And, you know, one of the questions in the panel was, you know, talking about what percentage of my marketing budget should I spend on social media? And my response was, well, I don't know that there's any absolute answer to that, but I said, what you need to think about is what sort of headcount do you need to hire in order to run your social media, right? You know, and it's not about percentage of spend. It's about, you know, because we all look at a boost post. I boosted a post the other day for $60 and I reached 8,500 people. I mean, it's not expensive. You know, to do that type of thing, but it's really about, to me, it's a resourcing issue is the other big challenge inside these franchise systems.
Sure. So, social media, I mean, obviously, you know, social is a big part of that. And when we're in a social setting, we don't walk in with, you know, everything pre-planned, predisposed. I mean, it's part of the conversation. It's part of the community that you're in. And it's a lot of interaction leading to engaging conversations that eventually, hopefully, leads to the right to be able to ask for some type of call to action. But at the end of the day, it does come down to the personal touch. And as you mentioned in your article in FranchiseExpo.com, you know, social media being the unequivocal people's channel. And people transcend brands. People do business with people that basically work for these brands. So ultimately, how important is it that the individuals in your mind within a franchise organizations that are interfacing with the consumer, interfacing with the candidate, how important is it for them to make sure their own personal brand and their own presence in the social space is representative of the type of relationship that they're looking to form with these individuals?
Yeah, look, I think it's critical to have, you know, the personal touch on social media. I mean, there's enough research these days that comes out of Gartner and Forrester's that says, you know, proprietary content, personalized content, you know, it gets, you know, hands down the best results, you know, as opposed to this sort of, you know, a pre-rolled content that just gets blasted out there that you see a lot of. You know, I think, you know, your own personal brand and the way you approach, you know, I mean, all sorts of stuff. It's like an email, right? It's always open to interpretation. Which is always a dangerous thing, but I think you do need to express your personality, you know, of yourself and your business when you're communicating, and you know, to your community across Facebook or Twitter or whatever other platforms you're going to be using. And I think it'll just become increasingly important.
So, Anthony, how would you suggest franchisors that want to learn more about this begin? What's their first quest? Because I think social is a place that even franchisors that might be interested in towing in are a little intimidated themselves. I don't think that there are as many people who live and breathe in this domain like Paul and you do. I think that as individuals there are a great many of us that do, but I'm almost of the mind to believe that there are far too many C-suite type executives of brands out there that just didn't grow up in social and quite don't understand it yet either, and maybe avoidance is easier for them than diving into the pool. So how do you make somebody in that kind of position more comfortable with, you know, people tend to not want to be feeling stupid. It's easier to avoid it than to be making myself look a fool. How do you approach that CEO and help him get started in a non-threatening, non-intimidating kind of a way?
I might build a rod for my back with this comment. Look, I think it's twofold, frankly. You know, I think, you know, guys, companies like Minalto and, you know, Paul and his organization, you know, and I know Paul does a lot more of it than I do, but, you know, we probably need to pull our fingers out a bit and run a lot more webinars and other sort of high-level training sessions and Q&A sessions that people can dial into, you know, and start to ask those questions. You know, they can ring me or any of my people directly and have that conversation, you know, but the other side of it, of course, you know, and we do get a lot of this is, you know, call us and, you know, bring on 20, 30, 50, 100 Facebook pages and Twitter accounts into the Monalto tool, you know, a no obligation sort of thing, and we offer this to everybody, so this is just not something for this show, you know, and see what it's all about. You know, I think people will get quite surprised by the amount of activity and the size of the communities that, you know, we got a small client in Australia, 32 Facebook pages on the system. You know, she's averaging 180,000 Facebook page views a week, just on 32 pages, right? It's a big number. You go to the other end of the spectrum of one of our bigger media clients, right, and they consistently average over 200 million Facebook page views a week. Now, until they aggregated all of their social media assets into Monalto, they had no clue, right, that the numbers were that big, right? And I think that's one of the things that, you know, some of these franchises, even I get surprised by some of the smaller ones, right, how much traffic there is going across those Facebook pages and how they're not tapping into it. Right, you know, so from my point of view, it's like, yeah, as a business, we probably need to do more around education and have webinars and open those type of things up and offer that, you know, that environment, you know, where people can feel free to come in and listen and learn, you know, ring us, happy to always talk to people and see what I can do to, you know, overcome some of the issues, fears, questions and those other obstacles that they may have in their minds about the management of social media. You know, but I always say best of all is just get on and give it a go, you know, and get your hands dirty.
Well, why don't you help tell the audience how they can get in touch with you, Anthony, as we get to the place where we're going to have to call it a wrap here pretty quickly, but don't want to let the audience get away before you've told them how they can find you.
Sure. No, thanks for that, Stan. So, yeah, my email address is just anthony.owen@monalto.com. Mobile phone number 310-266-8874. I know that's a Californian number, but I do live in Virginia, and that's the best way to get me.
We were able to tell about the Virginia by your accent. We absolutely knew you were a Virginia guy. Paul, anything,
everyone I'm from South Dakota.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts from you, Paul?
No, I mean, just we could easily talk, Anthony, for probably 3 or 4 more shows and get really into a deeper dive. So I appreciate the fact that you gave out your personal cell phone number. I'm certain that over time you'll be hearing from people. It's definitely, it's here to stay. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, as I said at the beginning of the show, I was looking at some of the things that pop up in memories from 7 years ago that I posted. And even then I had said, do you still think social media is a fad? And yet there are still some people that say, I think that's all going to go away. I said, yeah, 1 billion users on Facebook, hundreds of millions on other places, and we're still thinking it's a fad? Come on. I almost feel like Donald Trump, my hands are going out, like, you know, hey, you still think this? Anyway, you haven't experienced yet my Donald Trump and Stan's Bernie Sanders. We'll leave that for another day and a cold bottle of beer.
maybe we'll do another program in character, Paul. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go. Anthony, I really appreciate you being a guest on the show. I know it's got to be you have to have a quite a busy schedule, having spent 5 days out of the office. Might have felt like 5 years, of course, coming out of the San Antonio event of the IFA 2016. So I greatly appreciate you taking the time out today to be with us.
No, I appreciate, you know, Paul, you and Stan, you know, having me on the show. It's been a great conversation, and you know, happy to go round two whenever you think it might fit in.
Oh, that'll be great.
Thank awesome. You again, Anthony, Stan. Thanks again.
All right, thanks a lot.
Stan, another informative, riveting show on franchise today, as we're fully entrenched in year 7 of the event and gathering up a lot of momentum as we move forward. And I know coming up in March we have Dr. John Hayes, who's going to be on the show. We're firming up some dates and times there. Or actually, he'll be on in 2 weeks. We had to move him from next week to the following week, so he'll be on March 9th. And of course, we're trying to wrap up confirmation on next week's show, and maybe that'll be a surprise for everybody.
Yeah, I think that what we're doing for next week is At the risk of asking somebody who's a good friend of both of us to take a standby position after having been confirmed, I think it'll be a treat if we can lock down what we're trying for next week and make it up to our good friend the following week. So I guess you can promote who next week's supposed to be, right? Because it'll either be next week or perhaps the week after, right?
Yeah, Lonnie Helgerson has agreed to step into next week and is confirmed. And I've yet to come back with Lonnie and tell them that we are waiting on confirmation on somebody else. So, but I'm sure Lonnie will be happy to move into the week afterwards. He's a returning guest to the show. And, you know, it's great to see Lonnie back into the franchise world. He kind of took a little bit of hiatus to take care of some parental business. And as we know, family definitely is a priority. But I got to tell you, rejoining conversation with Lonnie and talking about his book, you know, Five Pennies, 10 Rules to Successfully Build a Franchise Mega Brand and Maximize System Profits, has just been some enlightening conversations. I do keep the book on my desk because it's one of the better books, I believe, in franchising. And then, of course, we'll be talking to John Hayes about, you know, his books and all that he's doing. But, again, as soon as we know about next week, we will introduce it, and hopefully everybody will be as excited. I know everybody will be as excited as we are once we get that confirmation.
Awesome. All right, Paul, again, a great week. Sorry I missed you at IFA. You know, if for whatever it's worth to you, I've got about four pages of names of people that I was going to look for that were there and I didn't see. And that's, again, it's one of those deals when you've got convention in a city like San Antonio, or as was the case in New Orleans, when we're in a convention center with a half dozen hotels wrapped around it, and everybody off to dinner and then not coming back to one central place in the evening, makes it a little harder to catch up with people that you're looking for. So this was one of those years, but we're back in Vegas next year, so hopefully everybody will be kind of centrally housed at Mandalay, and at least if we all go off to dinner in different directions, we might just find ourselves back together in the bar or in the casino. And those Vegas years, for all the walking that we have to do, as we have at MGM Grand for years, it is great, though, to have everybody more centrally housed so that the opportunity to feel the community of franchising is a little bit more in our favor in cities like Vegas.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Stan, until next week, it was a great show. My name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.